Let's move to the city attorney.
So a percentage change would indicate that you're increasing. So if there's 1,000 documents for this year, it would be.
But 1,000 documents per document.
Good morning.
Documents, but you're right, it's correct, it's more traffic.
Oh, sorry, good morning. Mayor, members of the council, budget advisory committee members, I'm Tracy Reeve, I'm the Portland City Attorney. With me today is our business operations supervisor, Christine Jividen, and Chief Deputy City Attorney, Harry Auerbach. I would first like to thank the members of our office's budget advisory committee for their thoughtful work, particularly our citizen advisor, Portland Attorney Melvin Oden Orr, and our client advisor, Shelley Tompkins from PBEM. And I also want to give a shout out to Dante James and the Office of Equity and Human Rights for developing the budget equity assessment tool, which our BAC and office used extensively in developing our budget and found very useful. While our office is very small in terms of the overall city budget, at just 0.3% of the city budget, we believe we have an impact on virtually all of the city's operations. As you know, we are responsible for all of the legal affairs of the city of Portland. It is our mission to provide excellent, objective, timely, and cost-effective legal advice and advocacy in support of the city's policy goals and to ensure that the official actions of the city, its elected officials, and employees comply with the law. To carry out our mission, we work with every elected official, office, and bureau of the city, and we provide legal services as well to all of the city boards and commissions as they are needed. We have four strategic goals. One is to provide the highest level of customer service to our clients through legal advice that is timely, accurate, and easy to access. To effectively and vigorously advocate for the city's interests in court and other contested proceedings. To support and advance the city's objective of achieving equity in all of its programs, services, and activities. And to ensure the accountability for our office's professional performance and effective stewardship of public resources. On that last goal, I would just like to mention that we were very fortunate to have a performance audit this past year by the auditor's team, and actually were gratified by the generally positive findings. We also appreciated the three suggestions that were made that will help us, we think, particularly with our accountability goal in taking our strategic goals to the next level through additional performance measures and a strategic plan that has sort of steps for making sure that we're realizing those goals. In terms of significant budget issues, in looking forward over the next 5 years, there are two significant budget issues we'd like to highlight for you. First, we believe that citywide we have a need for greater independent investigative capacity and enforcement capacity, both for civil rights matters and generally for code enforcement issues and the like. This does not necessarily correspond to our office's budget needs. We think it's a broader city question, and it's one that we will be working on with a variety of other bureaus, including the Auditor's Office, the Office of Equity and Human Rights, the Bureau of Human Resources, and others, to come back with a recommendation for you for next year. But what I want to see that recommendation have is a mechanism to have autonomous investigative capacity in the city, as well as greater capacity to do civil rights and code enforcement. Obviously, that will also impact the discussion that I just heard about the code hearings officer, and we plan to work closely with the auditor about that. And as I say, that's a proposal that I think requires discussion among a variety of bureaus and obviously elected offices, and that's something that we anticipate that not just we but other bureaus will be coming forward to you with next year with a proposal. The other significant budget issue that is particular to our office is a need for additional support staff, in particular legal assistants and paralegals, over the next 5 years. We have increased our attorney staff at a much faster pace over the past 15 years than we have our professional support staff. Part of this is due to attorneys doing more of the work themselves that legal secretaries and others used to do, as they do more word processing, more typing of their own briefs, more communication via email rather than formal letters that a legal assistant would type and send out. But some of it is just due to the fact that when we've needed, often we've come to counsel and identified a need over the past 15 years for an additional attorney. When we ask for an attorney and support staff, we have often gotten the attorney and not gotten the support staff. That's happened enough times that our support staff is really getting stretched very thin at this point. And just to give you an example, we look back and 15 or so years ago, we used to average 3 attorneys to each legal assistant. Now, many of our legal assistants are juggling 6 attorneys, and it's just not sustainable over the long term. Another example is last year, we were very gratified when counsel did fund our request for an attorney position to work on legal records management. That work has been continuing apace and will continue. We also asked for a paralegal. That request was not granted, but we really needed a paralegal to do the work, and so we realigned a litigation paralegal to that position. That has left us extremely short-staffed in paralegals in our litigation group. So those are just some examples. We're not asking for additional support staff this year, but it is a need that I'm going to have a mutiny on my hands soon if I don't figure out a way to do something about it.
So why aren't you asking for one this year?
Just as we looked at priorities and given that it was a, maintenance budget. Yes, thank you. Stabilization budget. We, again, are asking for an attorney position, but just felt that that was a higher priority. But
well, you just made a very compelling case. So other folks have been adding stuff to their requested budgets. I mean, I recognize that many bureaus, including yours, were constrained by the requirement to propose a cut. If you're proposing
right.
a new, it makes sense to me that employing more folks who are at a paralegal level would actually be more cost effective, would be very cost effective.
Well, so. It is true that as, you know, when our legal assistants and paralegals are completely booked, then what ends up happening is attorneys do some of those things themselves that don't, some of it makes sense for them to do. I mean, I think it's become more effective that attorneys are typing their own briefs while a legal assistant gets it finalized. Some of it is not so effective, and when you can't find a legal assistant who has the time to do it, and you go do it yourself. So, yes, if there's an opportunity to ask for that this year, we would love to do that.
So I believe the city attorney's office by charter answers to all 5 of the councils, so please
absolutely.
Consider this a request from me to propose such a package.
Great. Thank you very much, Commissioner Fritz. Okay. The next area I wanted to address was service inequities. In looking at service inequities, we have focused on our ability to meaningfully assist in the areas of policy development and implementation in the areas of civil rights enforcement, housing equities, the DOJ settlement enforcement, Title VI and Title II work, Title VI of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, Title II of the ADA. Disability policies, updating the city's civil rights ordinance, looking at city facilities and their accessibility to those of all gender identities and gender expressions, and policies to assist returning citizens in successfully reintegrating into society. We also believe we could do more in areas of citywide training on some of these areas that I've just mentioned, as well as a variety of access to justice issues along the lines of what the auditor staff was just addressing with the code hearings officer, because when costs are prohibitive, it does raise access to justice issues. Our key decision package thus far is to fund an additional deputy city attorney position to focus on these areas of civil rights enforcement, and to assist with developing a proposal to bring forward to you next year about the things I mentioned citywide. an additional focus of this position will be to assist in the development and implementation of legislation and policies to achieve the city's goals to bolster economic opportunity for all Portlanders, livability in all neighborhoods, and equity in service delivery. This position will continue to work on, well, we already have a person doing this work on a temporary basis. We were able to reallocate some funds from the DOJ work that got deferred for the rest of this fiscal year, but we will not be able to continue to fund the position absent council taking positive action on this decision package. And the work that is currently being done is the Ban the Box work on housing displacement issues and how best to address those. We're aware that past city policies have contributed to housing displacement, and work on a variety of other equity, broadly speaking, equity policy initiatives and civil rights. And another area where we really want to be able to do more is more training of city staff in conjunction with the Office of Equity and Human Rights on the city's legal obligations under Title VI of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which is our sort of outward-facing obligation to ensure that all programs, services, and activities of the city are available to all citizens without discrimination on the basis of the variety of protected classes. Our key decision package does link directly to our key priorities, both of that of providing the highest level of customer service through timely and accurate legal advice, and in terms of our goal of supporting and advancing the city's objective of achieving equity in all of its services, programs, and activities. It's also directly related to that portion of our mission focused on ensuring that the official actions of the city, its elected officials, and employees comply with the law. Particularly in the Title VI arena, that's where we believe that having more training and outreach to make sure that all of the city bureaus and staff are aware of those obligations and what they mean, would be very useful. We also believe that this position will enable us to continue to make measurable progress towards the mayor's identified priorities of equity and opportunity in complete neighborhoods by allowing us to perform more work, as I mentioned, in the areas of civil rights enforcement, compliance and training, and also on legal strategies to address housing equities and displacement. Our other budget requests are revenue neutral, so I wasn't going to address those specifically unless there were questions.
Maybe just a quick, you explained it in the narrative, but big drop over the last couple of years in outside council expenses, and you're proposing, what, $600,000 this year, right?
Yes, we have had a big drop in outside council costs for a variety of reasons. One is that we had a big spike due to a very large case that was handled by outside council, and we also had some significant expenses for Superfund. We have not had outside council for the Superfund matter for the last couple of years, although we will be retaining outside council again for a very strategic advice and direction, although not day-to-day, not the day-to-day work. We don't anticipate that being at the rate at which the prior outside counsel, just because of where the process is and also because of the outside counsel that we've identified and anticipate contracting with. We do anticipate an uptick, which is why you see the number moving from 400 and something to a projected 600 and something next year. But we also have a focus in the office on limiting our use of outside counsel to those situations where ideally we would like to limit our outside counsel to two situations and avoid using outside counsel for overload issues because it's much more expensive. Our average outside counsel, even with when we negotiated a discounted rate, is often $300 and something, whereas our cost of providing legal services, we project next year to be $138. So it's a big delta. We also think that we have more expertise about the city's needs and legal work than most outside counsel do. There are, so we want to avoid those overflow uses of outside counsel wherever we can.
What are the two areas where you would use outside counsel?
The two areas are conflicts where we don't have a choice. Legally, we have to get outside counsel in some situations. You know, if we have, say we have a police case and there's discipline, the potential for discipline of an officer at the same time that we're defending a case, then because we have adverse interests potentially with that officer, we need to hire outside counsel for them. And the other issue is, or the other area is, where we really do need that specialized expertise. For example, hiring strategy counsel for Superfund, and there are other areas. Bond counsel will always use bond counsel because that's an area of specialized expertise. And that does come up occasionally. But even there, we're trying to, where possible, hire outside counsel, get the benefit of their expertise and strategy, and still do the work that we can do ourselves rather than just handing the entire matter over to outside counsel.
I've been spending a lot of time with lawyers in your office recently. I think it has something to do with my bureaus. But I want to first say that my office, me in particular, we feel we are very well served by the lawyers in your office. And as you know, we have some very complex cases, big litigation, as Margaret Bax would say, gnarly cases. And so we really appreciate the professionalism and the attention we're getting on tough matters. On the question of whether your office expands the scope of its operations at some point and does more on the enforcement side and consult, you know, maybe creates a civil sort of civil rights area and staffs up. One of the, I want to be clear about the concern I've shared with you. It is not that we don't have superb lawyers and the capacity to do it right in-house. I think that goes without saying. I think that I would distinguish between the lawyers who give us advice and keep us on the straight and narrow versus actually doing administrative enforcement kinds of duties. And on that front, what a key factor for me will be, what's the difference in costs between creating our own enforcement shop versus contracting with someone who does that already, like the Bureau of Labor and Industries? And if there was a significant cost difference, that would be a big factor in my thinking, separate and apart from whether we should have more people with expertise to advise us about compliance generally. And the truth is, we are adopting lots of laws and rules, and we do need people that understand them and can advise us. And that's separate from whether they should be doing the enforcement. I echo what Commissioner Fritz said about having legal assistance. In fact, I will say that the law firms I used to practice at, you know, the trend was to hire more and more legal assistants, and they are of such quality and professionalism that they can handle things that once upon a time were really thought to be lawyers' work. And what that frees up is lawyers to come into our offices and give us high-level legal advice and not just be burdened with collecting documents and doing some of the stuff which is important but can be very time-consuming. So I echo what Amanda said. I think you should put in a request. If there's any budget, you should do it. I think this is the year that you should have the staff support. And frankly, if I call Harry to on a time-sensitive matter and I hear that he's busy typing up a brief, I would say that I'd rather he was working with someone who's helping him with that and able to come up and give us legal advice in a timely manner. So you have my support on that. And I want to just ask you one other question. We're now, a year into the experiment of having a dedicated lawyer handling public records. How's that working out?
Well, I just want to clarify, Commissioner Fish, which is that the lawyer who is dedicated to that position is absolutely working on handling some public records, but the intent of the position is not to have one person whose job it is to handle public records. It's to really be looking systematically across the city at how we're managing our legal records and coming up with new systems for doing that and doing citywide training about that. And so just with that caveat, I think it's going very, very well. We anticipate sometime in the next, certainly by the end of this fiscal year, beginning implementation of GovQ&A, which is our new citywide public records software. We'll be doing public records request software. We'll be doing training for that. We're also issuing right now, or very shortly, an RFI on a kind of a broader look at how can we integrate litigations records management, public records management. It's more of a global solution to some of our issues, and we're doing an RFI process because we want to get some really creative and innovative thinking on ways that we might do that. We thought some people in the information management sector might have better ideas about how to do that than the lawyers do, but we think it's really progressing well, and we're going to have a briefing of the commissioners and of bureau directors in the next month or so to update you on the status of that project.
As part of that, I'd like to make a request. I know that the new governor has put in place some new protocols on public records, and I would say that over the last 7 years, the thing that's maybe changed the most in my experience in this council is the extent of public records requests, the volume, the breadth. They're now more open-ended. We get them all the time. And what makes it especially complicated is sometimes we've got a lawsuit, a ballot measure, and an ongoing maybe interest by a citizen, and we've got to make sure that we're coordinating and all the documents are being produced in a timely manner. I do know that the governor has either proposed or implemented a new rule that says all public records requests get posted on a consolidated website and the documents are produced. Our friends in the media don't like that, because it deprives them of the advantage of being first to market and getting the documents. It does, however, seem to me, have a compelling public interest in saying that once a public records request is made, presumably the public should benefit from that, and we should not be just rewarding one reporter or cherry-picking. The information should be posted in one site so that a citizen can go and find out all the requests and all the disclosures. I don't know whether that's workable. I don't know whether you support it.
Oh, I do support it, and that's part of the intent. I believe we'll get part way there with the GovQ&A software, and absolutely in the RFI, that's one of the things.
One of the benefits of that, frankly, is we don't often know what public records requests are being served on our colleagues. And not that I want to spend my precious limited free time outside of work scanning that information. I do think that having it in one place does mean that we and the public can access it more easily. And again, if the governor and the state can make that work, I hope we take a good look at it.
Yes, and that is, as I say, we're in process on that. I think even the initial GovQ&A software will allow access to the public records requests that are out there. I'm not sure whether that software or the next iteration will also make all of the records that have been produced in response to public records requests searchable, with some limited exceptions.
So we had this conversation last week during the ban the box discussion. You're going to take a leadership role in putting together a comprehensive proposal for enforcement of various civil rights, sick leave, ban the box. So, I mean, I feel kind of we're kind of incrementally backing into that without sort of the comprehensive approach. So when would we expect from you a comprehensive proposal?
So my objective is, and intent is to very shortly begin. I mean, I've had some preliminary discussions with other bureau directors and various entities in the city, but in a more formal way to begin sitting down talking about what the needs are. I mean, it's at a very preliminary stage. It's a need that I think we have had, and that others that in the city that I have talked to concur that we have a need. How that gets addressed, what the best way is, I don't know, and I don't want to prejudge that. So I don't feel like the intent certainly isn't to back into anything. It's rather to kind of preview for you that that's work that we will be doing cooperatively within the city to come back to you with possible proposals on ways forward. I would think that that would occur in the next budget cycle. I think there's going to be some discussions throughout the year, and with commission's council member staffs and with the auditor's staff on what those needs are. There may be some alternative proposals come forward. And I did want to mention Commissioner Fish stepped out, but by no means do I think that the conclusion should be that this work or the function is centered in the city attorney's office. I think that's it's an open question of how that could best be structured, looking across what other comparable jurisdictions are doing, what's the most effective, what's the most cost effective, what is the right balance of other enforcement agencies versus us having the capacity to enforce sort of uniquely city-created rights.
Does so that answer your question? Just comment on, add to that. In my mind, this position is not specifically for that.
Correct.
It's more, many of our, several of our bureaus have an equity manager, almost deputy director, and I've been really impressed with Judy Prosper's work with the Department of Justice. So I see this position needed as throughout the city attorney's office, as well as advising all of the bureaus. We need somebody with who's an expert in equity issues, and that may or may not involve the civil rights enforcement or any of the particular complaints that we may get. It's needed anyway, and I think will inform your getting at your next proposal.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that is one area of work I would see assigning to this position over the coming year is working on that analysis of do we have unmet needs, and if so, what are they, and do we have access to justice issues that are precluding our citizens from, along the lines of what the auditor was discussing, that are precluding our citizens from enforcing rights that they have. But we have the council has, and I'm delighted by it, been doing a lot of work in the areas of, you know, equity being a priority, recognizing folks' civil rights, there's a breadth of work that falls into that general category. And it's a priority of our office. As I mentioned, it's one of our key strategic goals. And we really need someone who has that expertise and can be the point person on those issues for our office.
Do other cities of our size tend to have something like a civil rights enforcement office? Like, I know Seattle has an office that, for example, I don't know if this exactly qualifies as civil rights, but they have aggressive city policies to assist in combating wage theft, and I think they have internal capacity to deal with that.
Most cities of our size, and then, we often like to compare ourselves to Seattle, San Francisco, which are, of course, a little bit larger, but even, and they both have very, very robust civil rights enforcement and other, as you say, wage claims, that kind of thing, enforcement capacity. Even other cities that are more our size, if you look at the Madison, Wisconsin's and Denver, well, it's bigger, but again, somewhat comparable, some of the mid-sized California cities, they really do have civil rights enforcement offices, whether that's what they're called or not. And so particularly given Portland's emphasis on equity, civil rights, those kinds of issues, and often seeing ourselves at the forefront of some of those issues, we are behind other comparable cities in terms of our enforcement capacity.
When we were setting up the Office of Equity and Human Rights, there was definitely consideration of perhaps in phase two or phase three of that office that the civil rights component could be added there. So I think there's some discussions to be had as to whether it properly belongs in city attorney's office or in the Office of Equity.
And again, I just want to emphasize, I don't see that entire function being housed in the city attorney's office. I think we may have a support role of prosecuting some violations, but I've never thought that whole, civil rights enforcement office should land in the city attorney's office. And I just want to be clear about that.
That's going to be another good discussion. And to, following up from that, I'm a little wondering about the realignment package taking the Department of Justice funding for the community office, a community liaison, out of the city attorney's office and into the mayor's office. I certainly understand why it should be general fund rather than overhead fund. The compliance office community liaison is accountable to all of the council, and so I'm concerned about the perception in the community of taking it out of the city attorney's office that answers to everybody, all of them to the council.
Right, and Christine may be better able to address this. It's not the normal type of funding that comes out of our office, and we felt that the funding would better come from another source. What that source is was... So, yeah, Ellen Osinak is the one who, posited how that realignment should occur. Our concern was simply that it had sort of been parked in the city attorney's office initially, although it wasn't normally the type of funding that would be coming through our office, And so
well, it actually was chosen to be put in the city attorney's office so that it was an office that by charter is accountable to all five members of the council. So it's a technical nuance, but it seems to me that many of our bureaus have different flavors of money coming, or different colors of money, as Commissioner Fish calls it, coming through them. So was there a policy question in moving it to the mayor's office?
Pardon me? I'm sorry.
Is there a policy component?
I'm going to, if you don't mind, because I'm not conversant with all of the thoughts why the money should be transferred out, other than, as I've said, because it's not generally the kind of funding that we handle, and it's not technically for legal services. May I have Ellen Osinak follow up with you on the policy aspects of it? Thank you.
Yes, thank you. This has been really an interesting discussion, and a lot of it, I can tell, there's a lot more expertise in the room than mine. But I did want to echo that enforcement of civil rights around housing is, you know, I've hear anecdotal stories about people not being able to find apartments and being discriminated against. So I think that is a real, real issue. And also, I was looking at your dashboard, and I kind of just wanted to reflect a little bit that attorney hourly rate, I'm not sure why you would want that on there. I just wasn't sure why you would want that on there, because you remember this is going to go before the public, and they're just going to look at that and think, wow, they're making a lot of money, even though you guys probably aren't compared to other lawyers. And the other thing, it seems like you are reacting to risk to the city, is that right? In other words, you know, that in a way, what you're doing is you're there to reduce the risk to the city of big lawsuits, small lawsuits, whatever. And so consider finding a measure of risk and then showing how you reduce it. That would be a measure that would promote your department and also help people understand what lawyers for the city of Portland do. And then it sounds like you're trying to get into more proactive issues, and I don't know how far you're going to go into that, but then you would probably want some measures to show how you are doing in those proactive measures. And that's about as, it's pretty high level what I'm saying, but I hope that is helpful.
Well, I appreciate that. And I did want to just mention on the hourly rate, that's not the hourly rate that our lawyers are making. That's the hourly rate that our cost of providing legal services all in. So,
right. Okay, but I still don't understand why it would be on your...
Well, if I can offer something on that. We track the cost to the city of an hour of attorney services in order to try to keep ourselves in line to make sure that the cost to the city of using us, we're not wasting money. Okay, so our cost of service, which basically takes our budget and divides it among the total hours that attorneys actually work, so it doesn't count vacation and sick time and that stuff. It's just the hours that people actually work. That reflects what the true cost to the city of getting an hour's worth of legal services. Mm-hmm. And that's an important, we think that's an important thing for the council and the public to know, and particularly to try to keep it as stable as we can, to show that we are efficient stewards of public resources, which I think we are. I just want to make one comment on the question of risk. It is true that we try to help the city reduce its risk, but I want to be clear that how much risk the city takes is frequently a question of policy. And what we do is we advise the council and the bureaus about the potential risks of various things that they want to do, and they ultimately, for the most part, get to choose how much risk the matter warrants. That is, if they have an initiative that is central to what it is they're trying to accomplish, they may be willing to take a little more risk than just some ordinary run-of-the-mind contract that we have with somebody. So in one respect, yes, we are trying to reduce risk. in the other, but in a larger sense, we're trying to manage risk to encourage the council and the bureaus to take what we call prudent risks in order to accomplish the larger goals of the organization. And in terms of trying to find measures to measure that, it's a great point and something I'm sure we'll follow up on. What we found is it's very hard to measure what doesn't happen. And so we're still trying to wrap our heads around that, but I appreciate the point. So
yeah, I don't have any suggestions, but that's just what came to mind. I think you would want to bracket that attorney hourly rate in some way that the public would understand why you had it there.
Good points. And speaking of risk, we're at risk of blowing our schedule. So unless there are any other...
2 points quickly?
Quick.
The first is regarding the public records requests. One of the things I'm trying to do in the comp plan this time around is take our open data policy, which today exists only as a resolution, beef it up and make it a comp plan policy. So a lot of the sort of ordinary operational data of the city would become available to citizens and others on a self-service basis. The main goal is to allow people to figure out how to innovate using that data, but a side effect is that people won't have to file public records requests to get some of that data. They can just self-serve, so it should have a side effect of easing some of this problem. And I just want to support the request for equity personnel. You know, every part of city government that I touch, we're working on equity, whether it's the comp plan. You know, yesterday I was at the Active Transportation Summit, and equity was the lunchtime keynote. It just makes sense to me that we should have strong support for that in your office. So I hope we can fund that.
Thank you very much.